Now, concrete has done some amazing things in the world, like transporting clean water or keeping water out of certain areas, but it's gone just a step too far. It's urbanized to the point where you have so much concrete and asphalt and impervious surface area that now every time it rains, that rain hits the pavement and it becomes runoff immediately. There are these unintended consequences on top of the fact that it is one of the biggest contributors of CO2 in the world. Well, it's a new type of concrete that is made from really three main ingredients. The three ingredients really are reclaimed. It's these three main ingredients that then go in certain proportions, create a chemical reaction where you get really strong material, you get this high durability, but you also get, without getting too technical, hydrates go off during the reaction and it creates permeability.
Welcome to Mindful Businesses, and I'm your host, Vidya Iyer. In our podcast, we bring to you businesses that are mindful in their practices and processes. A mindful business adopts and employs sustainable social, economic, and environmental practices. Today, we talk with Greg Johnson, co-founder and CEO of Acripur, climate adaptation technology for the built world. He joins us from Spokane, Washington. Welcome, Greg.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Concretization is said to be a silent killer, a major environmental problem worldwide. What is concretization and how would you define it?
Concrete is really the building block of modern civilization. It's gone into building, you know, our buildings, the structures around us, water infrastructure, even underneath our streets. You think about the pipes and the tunnels and the tanks. And then think about all the sidewalks and the alleyways. It's everywhere. It's a ubiquitous material. The problem is the main ingredient that goes into making concrete is Portland cement. And the process of making Portland cement is responsible for like 8% of the world's CO2 emissions every single year. So you have this very useful material, but we've made so much of it. And it's made in a process that's very injurious to the environment. It's a problem that people don't really think about. In a sense, it's kind of this silent, destructive material.
Portland cement and all cement use limestone, which is heated up to thousands of degrees. In the process, it releases the carbon dioxide into our atmosphere.
That's exactly right. You're on it. And that doesn't get talked about much because that's a huge industry. And that's an industry that really does, in a sense, power the world because we need concrete in the world. At Acripur, one thing that we've looked at is, you know, we're really focused on a new type of concrete that can help cities manage stormwater. So our material is permeable. It allows water to go through it. That's one key aspect of the material. But the second piece of it is, there's a whole new technology that we utilize that does not use Portland cement. And so it's a whole new way now to make concrete that is inherently low carbon, and it utilizes reclaimed materials that are already out in the world. So we don't need to go and mine a bunch of limestone and put it in a kiln up to 2000 plus degrees Fahrenheit, nor take it into a grinder to get clinker material. It's just a whole different process that we consider to be inherently green.
Growing up in India, even in a big city like Mumbai, we had buildings which were made of concrete, but our yards had either just mud or some grass over it. Pretty soon, everybody wanted to park their cars in the building compound, and they concretized the compound, the building walls. In those days, we sort of thought of it as progress, but in fact, the silent killer had other problems that we are seeing now 20, 30 years later.
You're absolutely right. And so there's I call it an unintended consequence to concrete. Now, concrete has done some amazing things in the world. It has helped, again, I go back like transporting clean water or keeping water out of certain areas. It's done some amazing things actually for the health of humanity, but it's gone just a step too far because, to your point, I look at you know, I'm looking out the window of my office right now, even in downtown Spokane, Washington, this is a small city, but it's urbanized to the point where you have so much concrete and asphalt and impervious surface area that now every time it rains, that rain hits the pavement and it becomes runoff immediately. Now you have water issues. You have natural rain that should be going back into the ground to replenish groundwater, now does not get back into the ground. There are these unintended consequences on top of the fact that it is one of the biggest contributors of CO2 in the world in terms of industry. There are now different ways to look at this, but what we're trying to do is let's quote unquote have our cake and eat it too. We can still provide that paved, usable space, but let's do it in a way that gets water back into the ground naturally and doesn't produce all this CO2 when we produce the material.
What is the rate of concretization with so many of the countries who are still growing, developing, building better roads and better connectivity? What is the rate if there's a percent compared to, say, 10 years ago, 20 years ago? What is the rate of concretization or even the use of cement?
I've seen numbers all over the board. I've seen a number that says 4.4 billion tons of cement is produced each year, which equates to, I need to find the citation for these, but over 1 billion tons of physical concrete. That is a huge amount. And let's also think about when there's construction, retrofit construction, where you have existing concrete structures that need to get demolished to rebuild certain structures. That material then ends up going where? Into the landfill. And so there's a huge amount of waste that's produced, you know, from this leftover material. And so it's a big number. It's a number that is unsustainable, quite frankly, if we're going to continue to make concrete in the same way that we're making it today.
And the other side effect that I have read about is concretization almost makes our world like a kiln. It just increases the overall atmospheric temperatures, reduces the day and night temperature differences, which are required for various crops to thrive and grow, and maybe even rainfall. So the problems are not only the impermeability, the CO2 in our atmosphere caused by cement, but rising temperatures.
It's a huge issue, and I'm glad you hit on this. Urban heat island is a, I won't say a silent killer, but it is a very big problem in densely urbanized areas where temperatures can fluctuate 20, 25, 30 degrees in the dense urban area. So think of a downtown Los Angeles or a name the big city where that is definitely an issue. And there are some, well, I should say initiatives or some pushes now to obviously go more green. So you have more green space in cities, which I love. I think that's very much needed. So you can help reduce urban heat island effect. But at the same time, there still needs to be that usable space, that paved areas that allow you to move humans and vehicles and things of that nature. It'd be great to say that we're just going to do away with that and we're going to do away with all the vehicles, you know, on Earth. But the reality is, you know, humans are not great at necessarily changing our ways. Again, that's something that we've looked at is, well, can we now make a material that is inherently sustainable that helps solve the urban heat island effect because it's permeable? Again, it's a low CO2 type of solution.
So we talk about growth, and from it, we now talk about green growth. What exactly would be green growth? Would it be the use of nature or preservation of nature or using materials from nature?
I think all of the above. I think there needs to be the right balance of using nature-based design with your harder urban design. My view or my vision for green type of growth would be replace all the materials to the best of your ability that are not green, that have been around for over 100 years, concrete, for example, with a new greener type of concrete, greener type of material, and augment that now with nature-based design, more green space, more tree canopy, rain gardens, things of this nature. And I think you can combine those aspects to make our cities much more sustainable. And I think that needs to be the focus as we move forward, especially in the United States with the passage of this new infrastructure spending bill.
You talked about rain gardens. What are rain gardens?
I guess they can take on a different meaning. In the Northwest, here in the Northwest corner of the United States, rain gardens are used quite a bit in dense urban areas. And what they are basically little swales or little pockets of gardens, basically, that are implemented within the built environment. So along the side of a street, sometimes you'll see them in the middle of the street as a median where you plant native plants or flowers and you divert stormwater runoff to these little rain gardens that then naturally treats the stormwater. And you use, again, native plants that are easy to maintain, but you get that sort of green aspect. And it's a way to manage stormwater naturally and, again, just get more green space in our cities.
I've seen it in some small towns in Indiana, like Lafayette, where we lived prior to this. They actually had done away with the storm sewers. And like you said, they had put swallows with native plants, which in some ways also performed as some of the plants did phytoremediate. They cleaned up the oils, the runoffs from the road, and let out cleaner water into our waterways. But they also increased the water table to some extent. Why is that important?
It's very, very important. Again, and I think there are three factors that contribute to some of the water issues we're seeing in large cities throughout the U.S. and really throughout the world. Because of population growth and urbanization, we are depleting groundwater supplies and aquifers at a completely unsustainable rate. And so now when we pave our cities over with concrete or asphalt and it rains, that rainwater is engineered to go to a big underground conveyance system that then goes to a treatment plant. And then that water gets treated and it's discharged into a clean water body, which on its surface seems okay. It's like you're cleaning this water and you're sending it back out to a river or the ocean. The problem is these systems are now getting overwhelmed because we're getting larger, flashier rain events in less amount of time. And so now sewage and wastewater is ending up in our clean water ways. But besides that, even the clean water that ends up out there, it's not getting back into the ground to replenish groundwater. And so there are three issues. I think our gray water infrastructure is outdated. Our cities have urbanized with so much impervious surface area that water doesn't get back into the ground. And then climate change, quite frankly, is bringing these rain events that are sudden and they hit very quickly. Without replenishing groundwater, you actually see, and Mexico City is a great case study on this, the city is sinking. It's just been unnatural groundwater extraction is happening without replenishing groundwater, and that's a huge problem.
So let's talk about your solution, Aquiper. What is it made of?
Well, it's a new type of concrete that is made from really three main ingredients. One, without getting into some proprietary detail, one of them is an industrial mineral. It's one of the most abundant minerals in the Earth's crust. We combine that with an aggregate that has very fine feldspar. So feldspar is a mineral that, and we need the aggregate to be very fine. And then the third, I guess, ingredient would be a catalyst, which we source from agribusiness. The three ingredients really are reclaimed. Okay, so these are materials that typically go into other industries and they have waste piles of this leftover or excess material all over the world. And we can use that waste literally to make our concrete, and there's a lot of it. It's these three main ingredients that then go in certain proportions, create a chemical reaction where you get really strong material, you get this high durability, but you also get, without getting too technical, hydrates go off during the reaction and it creates permeability.
Do you use a lot of heat to make this product?
Not a lot of heat. In fact, the last step of the process is a very low heat sort of finishing process where you want to get the material up to about 200 degrees. And you do that for an hour and then it's ready to ship. It's ready to go out to a job site. The other thing is in warm climates, you wouldn't even need to do that. You could just keep it out on the yard for say 10, 20 days. And, you know, in 90 plus degree weather, that reaction automatically takes care of itself. And then it'd be ready to go. The final step in the process, that heating process, is kind of what helps finish it and facilitate high permeability rates.
Are you the inventor of this product?
No, our story's different. I'm not the inventor. Our inventor is a material scientist who has kind of a background. He's a professional engineer, but also has a background in mining and mineralogy. And the way this all came together is I saw a market or a need for permeable solutions way back when I was actually working a little bit in the real estate development world. And real estate developers or commercial property owners would need to, because of regulations, put on some, you know, in a new project, a stormwater facility to be able to manage stormwater on site. And I always thought, you know, if you could just make a material that would take the place of traditional pavement that actually solved the stormwater issue at the same time, there'd be a big market. And so I started my first company along with my co-founder, I think as far back as 2009, and we learned a lot about the market, and we were importing a product from overseas. There are huge issues with that whole, that was a lifetime ago, separate business model. But around the same time, we met our inventor who was working on a cement technology, and we kind of came together and it was a meeting of the minds, us on the market side, him on the technical side, and Aquapore was born.
And what is his inventor's name?
Matt Russell. And he is actually the CEO of, I'd consider it our sister company, the concrete company called BWIGC Inc. And IGC stands for Inherently Green Concrete.
So you take these three materials, finish it off with low heat. How strong is it? Can I use it to build my basement?
Yes, potentially. It would be strong enough for foundations. The theoretical strength of this technology is above 20,000 pounds per square inch, compressive strength.
And what is concrete?
Concrete is around, 5,000 to 8,000 PSI. Ultra high strength concrete can get up to 20,000 plus PSI, but it's very expensive to make that way. And it's, again, chock full of Portland cement. This is an invention that there's actually papers out on it, very generally, not talking about the specific material, published, you know, technical papers about the theoretical strength. But what it comes down to is the size of the material. So the smaller the material is, the more rigorous the chemical reaction is.
Smaller in terms of the molecules being smaller.
Yeah, if you can get it down to the molecular sort of almost dust particles, you're going to get extremely rigorous chemical reaction in a very strong material. That's something right now that we're working on is as we source the materials, they're coming in all different sizes and gradations, and being able to then work with our supply partners to get it sized at the right size.
Like porcelain with such a fine clay.
Yes.
Is much stronger than your red earthenware extruded to a very, very thin cup, which has all the strength of a very thick earthenware cup.
Yep, same idea, same concept.